Welcome to Banter, the panel game where we try to establish what's hot and what's not. I'm Andrew Collins, and joining me to hammer out top threes in categories covering anything from hush puppies to atomic kitten are Barry Cryer.
Hello.
Richard Herring.
Hello.
Sue Perkins.
Hello.
And Will Smith.
Hello.
Okay, before the show, each of our panellists was given a different category. They were asked to write down their top three for that category and to put their answers into a noisy envelope. Between the rest of us, we'll be trying to come up with top threes for each of these four categories one by one, with points scored for good suggestions, good objections, and for naming any of my personal favourites, which they don't know, at which you'll hear this. Remember, aces are high, chalk dust counts as out, and there's nothing in this game for two in a bed. Clear? Good. Let's get straight down to it and kick off with our first top three. Our first category is your top three man-made landmarks. Now, in each round, whoever filled in the envelope for the category in question sits out the chat. In this case, that's Sue Perkins. Will Smith, would you like to start us off?
Well, I'm a big fan of the Leaning Tower of Pisa. It's quite an affectionate name. Should really be called the Crap Tower. British, isn't it?
There's a restaurant there. Did you know that?
No.
The customers keep falling off their chairs.
What I particularly love about it, it took 200 years to build, and the lean started 5 years in. And I just really admire the fact that, you know, rather than somebody going, maybe we should just leave it at a couple of stories, they just went, no, let's just keep ploughing on in willful ignorance of the structural defects to produce, you know, what is one of the world's most loved buildings, isn't it?
And one of the world's most famous buildings.
Most famous buildings, yeah. And the reason we know it's loved and famous is, of course, because in Superman 3, the bad Superman goes around being really evil, and one of the evil things he does is he actually straightens the Leaning Tower of Pisa, which... It's not really that evil, really. It's slightly mischievous, correcting structural defects.
But... We often talk about this at my local Get a Life Club.
Well, I'm going to give you 3 points for mentioning Superman 3 so early, and one for Barry for that excellent put-down. Richard, anything man-made that you like?
I like the Scott Monument. Edinburgh are big fans of the early 90s episodes of Neighbours. I like the Sir Nabus Giant, which is a rather rude hill figure in Dorset, I believe. If you have sex on the glands of the Sir Nabus Giant... you will become pregnant. That is the. You don't know which one of you will become pregnant.
Also, you'll be arrested by the Dorset Constabulary, presumably, won't you? It's
well,
outdoors.
I think they let it go. Well, possibly the Sir Nabus Giant was a giant who died, and the police drew a chalk outline around.
Barry, have you got any you like particularly?
The Arc de Triomphe. I like that. There's a sort of theme emerging. If I like... You don't want all my three now, do you?
You can just throw them in at
No, I realise there's a phallic theme, because there's a Leaning Tower of Pisa, Nelson's Column, and the Arc de Triomphe.
That's the least phallic, I suppose.
What, Nelson's Column?
No, the Arc de Triomphe.
The Arc de Triomphe is a Gallic symbol. Did Nelson use half bottles of Optrex?
Stonehenge, slightly ruined by the... proximity to the roads around it, isn't it?
It's fun. I like Stonehenge. Can I have castles in general?
Well, all of them.
Yeah.
Stonehenge isn't a castle.
That's very generic.
But it's
a henge.
Yeah, but
if there's a clue. There's a clue in
well,
the name.
It might have been a castle. It might be the ruins of a castle for.
It's not the ruins
giants.
Of a castle.
No,
do you know anything
no.
about it?
Well, what is it then?
Historic Lego.
What's a henge?
A henge is a collection of stones near a major A road.
Well, why does it need the word stone in stone?
That's to remind you what it's made of, because there were a couple of wood henges which have disintegrated.
The wolf blew the other one, said it was a straw henge and a stick henge.
Anyone seen the pyramids? I mean, seen them in real
They're
life.
Tombs, aren't they? But part of the deal was that if you were the Pharaoh's servants, you were put in with him alive, which is a bit of a bad will to hear read out loud, isn't it? When you're thinking, oh, I've served him for 50 years since I was a lad, I'm sure he's going to give me some gold or something. Ah, a slow lingering death, thanks. I mean, that's brutal.
Yeah. What's quite good about the pyramids is there's a lot of little antechambers in that are down very, very narrow passages that you can only get through to with fibre optic cameras. Ooh. We found one quite recently, and it was completely empty, and there's another door at the other end. It's like the Egyptians knew what was going to happen. They just keep putting in these little empty chambers. Going, this week, one day they'll be able to put cameras down there. They'll be looking for stuff.
They'll really screw them up.
Yeah. Do you think at the end they just find an Indiana Jones box set?
Which is best out of the Eiffel Tower and Blackpool Tower?
The Eiffel Tower, because of all the great films that have been set there. Condor Man. Superman 2.
You were at my club the other night.
I was hoping if I mentioned each individual Superman film, I might get points corresponding to the number of the
franchise.
You can
have two for Superman 2.
Thank you very much.
Superman 1,000.
It's got a very rackety lift, Blackpool Tower. Anybody been up in it?
No.
The guy does ghoulish jokes to you. The lift attendant.
What,
you know,
saying this might snap?
It hasn't plunged for weeks, he said.
Wasn't it meant to be temporary, the Eiffel Tower? Wasn't it meant to be only up for a couple of weeks?
Their anniversary or something?
It's like the London Eye. It's excellent.
That's good. Very good.
Doesn't go very fast, though, does it? Well, it's hardly Alton Towers.
Would you like to speed it up? Once every hour, it's just going...
Really? People stuck against the glass. Yeah. Yeah.
None of you have matched up with my own personal choice. Do you want to just have a quick stab?
Great Wall of China.
No.
Hadrian's Wall.
No, it's not a wall.
Jesus in Rio.
Nope. My favourite is the giant at the Joyland Fairground at Great Yarmouth.
What?
Well, which is a huge model giant that moves around. And when I was a child, I was scared stiff of it.
Was it a man on stilts?
It's a proper giant. It's made of fibreglass, presumably. And
that's not a proper giant. It should be made of flesh and bone.
Yes, exactly. Well, a real giant.
It's not a real giant, but I thought it was because I was a child. Also, we were staying at a caravan site called California, which I also thought was in California. But I was only 7, so you've got to let
Fair
me
enough.
Off. Yeah. Well, time's up on this topic, I think. I'm going to have to ask you for your final top threes. Richard Herring, what have you got?
I'll go for the Sir Navis Giant, the Gherkin in London, and Nelson's Column.
Barry Cryer, your top three, please.
Nelson's Column, Leaning Tower of Pisa, and, the Arc de Triomphe.
Will Smith.
Leaning Tower of Pisa, the pyramids, and castles. Just like castles.
The points have been flying around like moths at an ideas meeting, but you can all score some bonus points if any of the answers in Sue Perkins' envelope match any of yours. So, Sue, please let us know. What are your top three man-made landmarks?
Leaning Tower of Pisa. The Reptile Centre on the Isle of Skye, billed as, I quote directly, the most exciting place on Earth. And Centre Parks, the bell jar environment that the weather can't get to. Although, of course, they forget it's not the weather that spoils the holiday, it's your family members.
Okay, Sue, you matched up Leaning Tower of Pisa with Will and with Barry, so they get 1 point each and you get 2 points. So that means at the end of that round we have, in last place, Richard Herring, in second place, Barry Cryer and Sue Perkins, but in the lead, Will Smith. Okay, now for one of our quickfire rounds. This one is called Either Or, where we award points not for the answer, but for the reason behind it. Sue Perkins, you're up first. So, Either Or, Noddy or Big Ears?
See, that's the second time today I've been forced to make a decision between a 100-year-old gnome and a boy with a wooden head. And it is a killer. But I would have to pick Noddy, simply because obviously it's a very popular show and it's been syndicated to every country in the world, I think. And of course, bearing in mind he nods a lot, in France, Noddy's called Wee Wee. It's true. It's called Wee Wee. Yes, yes. Whereas Big Ears just called Grand Ore, which is boring. So Noddy is my answer.
Some fine logic reason. There. I'll give you 3 points for that, Sue.
Thank you.
Richard Herring, Heaven or Hell?
Tough choice. Milton Satan said it's better to rule in hell than serve in heaven. Better to rule in heaven, though, isn't it?
So you want
really,
the top job.
Well, you know, he's leaving out a very big option there. Hell sounds like it's bad, but Bart Simpson says, wouldn't you just get used to the heat after a while, like in a hot bath, which I think is a very, very good point. And they only eat nectar and ambrosia in heaven. I don't really like cream rice, so I think I'll go for hell for the hell of it. It'll be fun.
Okay, you can have 2 points for that. We'll add those points onto our scoreboard and move straight on to our second top three. Will Smith, you're sitting this one out, so please sit back as we hammer out the top three celebrity chefs. Can you start us off, please? Barry Cryer.
No, I'm showing my age now. Fanny and Johnny Craddock, iconic figures, pioneer chefs. They used to do a recipe every week and you could write in for it. And they did donuts one week and a guy came on at the end of the show, beamed at the camera and said, here's the address to write to if you want your donuts to look like Fanny's. And it's true.
An instant 4 points for telling that.
Ainsley Harriott.
Ah, you like one of the modern.
Yeah, well, I wrote a book and Ainsley was a great help because I used to watch him. If he came on television, I would walk out of the room and write another chapter. The great Littleton, Humphrey Littleton, I'm indebted to him. You've probably heard him say it. You can buy a packet of sausages, and on the packet is a picture of Anthony Worrell Thompson. And underneath it says, prick with a fork.
Sue.
I like the fact we've gone for more of the Victorian freak show cooks. We've had the two fat ladies, the big women. We've had the hairy bikers. I'd like to... Oh,
I love the hairy bikers.
Really?
They are my favourite hairy bikers who cook on television.
Anyway, so we've had that. I'd like to see pushing the bounds more Victorian freakery. I'd like to see some Siamese chefs. The Naked Mermaid chef, Monkey Boy Makes Pasta, anything like that.
We've had that, Jamie Oliver.
And I have to say Galloping Gourmet would be my original and still the best. Booze in one hand, lovely wife in the other, wink to the camera, and basically the food was all cream, ghee, fat, lard, starch, butter, until the heart attacks came.
You can have 2 points for reminding me of the Galloping Gourmet. He was my first TV chef and I liked him very much. Richard, you used to like food.
I did, I've given up eating. I like Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall, who... not only cooks roadkill, which I admire, it's true, he cooked human placenta and made it into a pate.
Did he find that in the road?
I think so.
That was a difficult birth.
I've been to the Fat Duck, which is Heston Blumenthal's very strange restaurant out near Reading somewhere, but it's absolutely incredible. They do. He's this guy kind of mixes. You have like snail porridge and bacon and egg ice cream. It's like the Willy Wonka of the chef world. But it's genuinely, it's the most. It's a really posh restaurant. You go for lunch and you have 15 courses.
He injects Tommy ketchup into chips, doesn't he? You've seen that?
Yeah. I like the Swedish chef from the Muppets.
Well, you can have points for that. That's a popular answer. I like that.
Monica from Friends. She's a chef.
Chef from South Park.
Soup Nazi from Seinfeld. Neelix from Star Trek Voyager.
The chef in Superman 3.
I know who we haven't got. Big Cook, Little Cook. It's a children's programme.
Yes.
I don't have any children. I watch children's TV.
That's all.
Ballamore.
Right.
Don't know if anyone.
You keep him talking, I'll make the phone call. Yeah.
Okay, I think we must stop there because I'm salivating. I'm sure you want to get home. Please give me your final top three, starting with Barry Cryer, your top three celebrity chefs, please.
Fanny Craddock, Mrs. Beaton, Ainsley Harriott.
Excellent. Sue Perkins?
Galloping Gourmet, I'm going to go for the Swedish chef. And because it's Will, and Will likes Bergerac, I'm going to go for the character Paul Cook in the Bergerac episode The Company You Keep, played by the actor Tony Selby. And I researched that for you, because I love you.
I've just got a very depressing picture of my life.
Richard Herring, your top three, please.
Big Cook, Little Cook is one choice.
Does one handle the lower oven and the grill?
Phil Vickery, Mr. Fernbritton, and the Swedish chef from the Muppets.
OK, well, let's see if any of you are going to get any additional points. Will Smith, please tell us who are your top three celebrity chefs.
Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall, because of the willful impracticalities of his recipes. Delia Smith. And Nigella Lawson, because... yum.
OK, well, no matches there, so no extra points, which means that round two leaves us with, in last place, Richard Herring, in third place, Will Smith, second, Barry Cryer, and in the lead, Sue Perkins. Okay, time for another quickfire round. This time it's simply the best, where we get the audience involved. So, guests, I'd like all four of you to write down your favourite Bond, please. Now, as the audience arrived today, we asked them who their favourite Bond was. Our guests will score points if their favourite is the same as the overall audience favourite. So, Sue Perkins, your favourite Bond?
Always Roger Moore. Yes!
Yes!
Roger Moore. Who can forget Roger Moore in Moonraker? He's 108 years old in a boiler suit. He's in the middle of space, atmospheric pressure, God knows how many millions of tons, still manages to raise an eyebrow. Roger Moore.
Barry Cryer, your favourite Bond?
Perversely, I always go for the underdog. George Lazenby.
Yeah. Yeah,
the one-hit wonder, the on Her Majesty's Secret Service. The man was superb.
Okay, Will Smith, your favourite Bond?
Roger Moore. Because people aren't going to say Connery, and I know it's often, Connery's described as like, when he walks in a room, it's like a panther entering the room. He's just raw sexual energy. He's Elvis Presley, whereas Roger is Cliff Richard.
Richard Herring, your favourite Bond?
Jenny.
Okay, let's have a look at the audience survey then. In third place, with 15% of the vote, Brosnan. Yay. Second place, with 16% of the vote, Roger Moore. Yay. And number one, the overall audience favourite, with 49% of the vote, Sean Connery. Yay. So no matches there, no extra points. Let's push straight on with our next top three. This time it's your top three nemeses. Richard Herring, you're my nemesis in many ways, and you're sitting this one out. So, what do you think? Sue Perkins, nemesis.
I think to be a proper nemesis, you have to have many things. An underground lair really helps. That sort of, you know, a sort of British accent with a slight whiff of gayness and a fatal flaw. And the nemesis, I think, that has all of these attributes is Davros. I wouldn't say it to his face, but Davros is, I suspect, a bit gay. He is British, played by the Norfolk-based actor Terry Molloy. His fatal flaw, he just can't hold down the relationship, Davros. He can meet women, he can talk to them, he can threaten them with extermination, but he just can't keep it going past the honeymoon period, which for him is a matter of minutes. I think Gunther von Hagens is the enemy of people who think that bodies should stay in their graves. And as a result, he'd be quite a good nemesis. Worst nemesis, Mr. Sinister from the X-Men. Just for the name, really. It's a real giveaway. Come and meet me in the darkened alley. Who are you? My name's Mr. Sinister. You're not going to seriously take that on board, are you?
So you have to have 5 points, I think, for calling Davros gay. On
BBC. A bit gay. Can I have one more? I just want to put in a shout for Rosa Klebb, who was from Rush With Love and who had special footwear. Some people go for a stiletto or, you know, a sort of kitten heel. She went for a shoe with a knife in it, which was interesting. Hampered by the fact she had tiny little lady legs. All you need to do is just hold her and she could come on knee.
Will Smith.
Hugo Drax in Moonraker is one of the greatest nemeses in fiction. I think what is truly inspiring about Drax is the grandeur of his plan. People often cite Goldfinger as the great Bond villain, but he's just a petty thief, whereas Hugo Drax wants to kill us all. He's also incredibly witty and urbane, such as when Bond turns up at his space station and Drax says, "Mr. Bond, you return with all the tedious inevitability of an unloved season." And, yeah, and Bond says, "I thought there weren't any seasons in space. As far as you're concerned, only winter." The guy is a poet.
Any nemesis not in a Bond movie that anyone likes?
Moriarty.
Mm. Moriarty.
Sherlock Holmes' nemesis, because he was just wonderful. Of course, they wrestled on the Reichenbach Falls, and we all thought Sherlock Holmes was... Well, I wasn't around at the time, you understand. Close, but everybody thought Sherlock Holmes was dead, and Conan Doyle had to bring him back. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson were camping out on Dartmoor. Jemmy it in.
I'll give you a point for that.
Holmes
for
said
brazen.
To Watson, "Look up, Watson, what do you see?" He said, "I see a clear night sky, Holmes, nearly every star visible and full moon. God is in his heaven and all is right with the world." And Holmes said, "You're a dickhead, Watson. Some bastards nicked the tent." Just say Moriarty so I could do all that. Sorry
about
that. It was
worth it. You can have a point again for just being brazen, I think.
Anyone going to go for Darth Vader? But in the original films, in the prequels, he's just turned into this simpering Dawson's Creek bad boy. And it's completely ruined at the end as well. When he finds out that he killed Padme and he stands up and waves his arms around going, "No!" They say, "Oh, well done, George Lucas. You've turned one of the greatest villains in cinema history into someone who looks like Bernard Breslau playing Captain Hook in a regional panto."
A got to give you points for passion, Bill.
Okay, characters that aren't in films. I think Heathcliff, then.
He's a lover, isn't he? He's not the
Yeah, but
nemesis.
He's also her nemesis. He drives her to the depths of despair and beyond. You see, he wanted...
Isn't that more about her, though, Sue? I'm sure. Is that really a nemesis? What's the definition of a nemesis? Just somebody who bugs you slightly.
Yeah.
Mr. Giles?
What, a teacher?
Yeah, he put me in detention for bringing them on games camp.
Fair enough.
Good.
That's good.
Bruiser Wilkinson at school used to hit us with a chair leg behind the knee. Bruiser was obviously a nickname. Her real name was Sister Teresa.
I think it's time to reveal your top threes. So, Will Smith, your top three nemeses, please.
Hugo Drax, Carl Stromberg from Spy Who Loved Me, and Darth Vader from the original Star Wars films.
OK. Sue Perkins, your top three nemeses.
Dead botherer Gunter von Hagens. He says he's a doctor. Norfolk-based Terry Malloy in his guise as Davros. Rosa Klebb would be my third one, actually.
OK. Barry Cry, your top three nemeses.
Cliché, but the Daleks. I think the Daleks.
Yep.
Nemeses. Moby Dick.
Moby Dick, of course.
Moby Dick.
And your third?
Moriarty.
Okay, let's see if there are any more points up for grabs. Richard Herring, please tell us, from your envelope, what are your top three nemeses, please?
My first one is Davros, who is the leader of the Daleks, so maybe Barry has a point too. Number two, Satan, is the ultimate nemesis. And number three, Jesus, who is Satan's nemesis.
OK, we had two matches there, Richard. That means you get 2 points, 1 point to Sue for saying Davros and 1 point to Barry for saying Daleks. And that means the scoreboard looks like this at the end of that round. In last place, Richard Herring. In joint second place, Barry and Will, and still in the lead, Sue Perkins. OK. Time for our final quickfire round called Who Would Win? A series of hypothetical bouts of anything from three-card brag to connect four. Again, it's points for reasons, not answers. So, Barry Cryer, who would win at checkers, Tony Blair or Gordon Brown?
Tony Blair, because Gordon Brown wouldn't move. He's a dog that doesn't bark. He would not be making a move on the board. He would be biding his time for too long, and Blair would romp it. Matthew Parrish wrote a lovely line. He said, Gordon Brown as Prime Minister, death by droning.
OK, you can have 3 points for that. Finally, Will Smith. Who would win at tossing the caber? Percy Thrower or Liz Hurley?
Percy Thrower, as I recall, is a deceased Blue Peter Gardner, somewhat limited in his caber-tossing abilities. And Liz Hurley is a woman who appears in films. I wouldn't really say acting, but she's kind of in things. Percy would probably get distracted and upset at the fact that the wood was dead, and he'd try and console it. And that would give Liz the advantage to really chuck it.
If you cross a lettuce with a caber, you get a salad that tosses itself.
3 points, I think, for that, Will. OK, we'll add those points to the scores and go straight into our final top three. Barry Cryer, you're sitting this one out. The rest of you are after your top three things you can make from paper. Richard Herring, please do start us off.
I really enjoy making papier-mâché stuff out of newspaper at school, but all I seem to remember is you'd blow up a balloon and put it on a balloon for some reason. I don't know what you'd add.
The key thing is that you put it around the balloon. When it goes hard, you pop the balloon and take the balloon out of the hole, and then you're left with a shell.
You know, but
like a balloon.
That's exactly what Gunter von Hagens.
I like, also when you're at school, you'd get like the a pen and you take the insides out, so it's just a tube, and then you'd get a piece of new paper and spit on it and put it in your mouth, and then you could blow that at people and hit them in the face. That's quite a good use of paper. Confetti, that's quite good. You could throw that at people.
That's
I like
useful.
Kind of using paper as a missile. Because it's kind of fun. It's hard to hurt someone with it.
Sue, what have you got?
It's all perspective. As we can say, it's great to write. You can write things on it. You can read beautiful works of fiction. We might see it from that angle. Ray Mears, of course, for him, on a trek to the Sahara, paper is shelter, bedding, clothing, and with the right incisions, a long-term sexual partner. So, what are those things at the end of a bit of lamb? The little paper hat with furls.
Yes, lamb shoes.
I love the lamb shoes.
I'll give you a point for saying lamb shoes. Will?
This might be an urban myth, but apparently the SAS are taught to kill people with paper in 15 different ways.
Ooh, wow.
I know. I can only think of one, which would be writing to a hitman asking him to do it for me. But there's lots of other great uses. You can write an anonymous letter to someone pointing out all their faults. You can make lists. I like to do that. You know, people I hate, women I'd like to sleep with, men that could turn me. And, of course, toilet paper. Where would we be without toilet paper? France. So there's many uses.
Origami's good.
Yeah.
My favourite thing to make from paper is not just origami.
Origami
it's a specific
swan.
Origami,
origami swan.
Bird.
Swan.
I've made it.
Oh. It's flying, it's moving.
It flaps when you do that.
It's Condor Man.
And I got a round of applause. So well done to you, Richard. You get 5 points for saying origami. Someone, do you want to touch it?
Yeah, I do. Just want to see workings of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice.
Is this how you get girls, Colin? Is that how you wooed your wife?
It was a massive one. That big.
With, and then it was squawked and went, marry me. I'd marry only did that. If anyone could make an origami bird fly in and speak to me.
Yeah.
That, in fact, that's the only person I'm going to marry. I'm not marrying anyone unless they can.
Right now, women all over Britain are frantically folding paper and trying to get it to talk. What are those things at school? It's folded and it's got like 4 squares.
Oh, yeah.
You pick a number, then you open it, and then you pick a colour, and then somebody opens it, they go, you smell of wee. And then you start that. You start again.
Money.
Money's good.
Money is the best use of paper there is.
And hats. You make paper swords, pretend you're a pirate on the banisters of your grandmother's house. Inlays for CDs so you can read all the words.
Ah, your Marillion album.
Yeah. You learn them all before you get home on the bus.
Do you want to recite some now?
Oh, huddled in the safety of a pseudo-silk kimono wearing bracelets of smoke, naked of understanding.
Oh. I'm going to give everybody else 1 point. Okay, well, let's get our top threes then at the end of that round. Will Smith?
I will have letters, hats, and toilet paper.
Okay, Sue Perkins, your top three, please.
Papier-mâché, shelter, bedding, clothing, and sexual partner, if needs must, and lamb's shoes.
Lamb's shoes. Okay, Richard Herring, your top three, please.
I will go for papier-mâché balloon, money, and the big origami bird that comes through my window and tells me it wants to marry me.
Okay, the game's currently wide open, so this could change everything. Barry Cryer, would you please give us your top three things you can make out of paper?
Russell. I've got confetti.
Yes.
I've got hamster bedding. No, well, we had a hamster and it died, fell asleep at the wheel. But
that's very good. That is very good. That's a 2-pointer.
Shameless.
Yeah.
Oh, and I'm eliding here with Sue. I think the chef's hats on chicken legs, in actual fact.
Well, we'll count that. Often. One match there. We'll count lamb shoes. I think that means 1 point to Sue, 1 point for Barry. And that means at the end of today's show, our top three losers are Barry Cryer, Richard Herring, and Will Smith. And this week's winner is Sue Perkins. So that's all from us for today's show. A big thank you to all my guests. And remember, to is human, but to is Hugh Grant. Goodbye.
Banter was presented by Andrew Collins and featured Barry Cryer, Richard Herring, Sue Perkins and me, Will Smith. The show was devised by Tim Barber and the producer was Richard Grocott. Banter is an Avalon production for BBC Radio 4.